coming to you live from our secret underground lair.
This is Gotham Undercover,
a Golden Spiral Media podcast dedicated to the Fox television series Gotham.
This week we discuss a new chapter from the storybook of Gotham's villains and defenders of justice.
Now it's time to join your hosts, Tim Arthur and Ryan Boyles, for
Gotham Undercover.
Hey there, citizens of Gotham. I'm Tim, and this week, filling in for Ryan,
I am Karen, normally from Witness Prophecies.
All right. Well, welcome, Karen. I appreciate you stepping up to fill in for Ryan this week.
No problem. Anytime I could talk about a comic book show, I'm there.
Awesome. Well, this week's episode is The Scarecrow. It was directed by Nick Copus and written by Ken Woodruff. We looked up Nick Copus, and his past shows, he's done some work on Nikita, which was, he's got a really good visual style. And I think it really showed in this episode. I thought this was a pretty awesome episode. What do you think?
Yeah, me too. That makes sense with the prison scenes.
Yeah. Well, we wanted to take a minute to tell you how you can support GSM by giving to Patreon. This month, we're doing a supporter spotlight. So we're going to take a minute to hear from Jeff, one of our patrons. And I got to tell you, this audio segment, jingle music, doesn't really fit for Gotham, but it's an awesome promo. So listen in as Jeff talks about what he likes about GSM.
So for the month of February, we're taking a look at some one-on-one conversations we recently had with some of our Patreon supporters and trying to get to know them a little bit better and what they like about Golden Spiral Media. So here's a bit of a conversation that Brian recently had with Jeff Gentry, X-Force 11.
All right, so what's your favorite GSM podcast?
Well, see, that's a hard thing because that's like asking because it's about the people. So that's,
yeah, good point.
That's the hard part. Although I will say it's Aero Squad because the community around Aero Squad is really great. But, you know, the cool thing is I just started listening to Stuff I Learned Yesterday.
Awesome.
Just started getting in touch with those people and that group. And that's been a fun thing to add because it's just totally different from a genre TV podcast. So it's been a lot of fun.
Nice. But besides Aero Squad and Stuff I Learned Yesterday, what other favorites do you have on GSM?
I mean, Aero Squad, Central City Underground, Stuff I Learned Yesterday, and Triple Cast. I listen to all of those. I try to get to Gotham Undercover, and I try to get to The Devil You Know, too.
All right. Well, thanks, Jeff, for sharing your opinion about GSM and telling us about some of your favorite podcasts. We're honored that you listen to our show. And I have to say, that is some pretty happy-go-lucky music, wouldn't you say, Karen?
Yes, I was tapping my toes. I don't know how we're going to get back in the mood to talk about Gotham, but let's talk about the teaser for next week, shall we? Wow.
Yeah, the Twitters and the fandom is ablaze about this teaser.
Seriously, we're going to get the Young Joker next week. It is in the promo. It's in an article on EW.com. That's Entertainment Weekly. Look it up. I highly recommend you see it before you watch next week's episode because, wow.
Yeah, we're going to have the link in the show notes as well. So definitely check it out.
Crazy good. Crazy good. And when I say crazy good, I mean crazy good.
Well, we were saying earlier in the season that we wondered if we'd see the Joker, and I think that question's been answered for us. I think the fans are all over it, as I mentioned. Definitely the Joker, in terms of Batman lore, is one of the most infamous villains. So
sure.
It's going to bring a lot to the show, and I can't wait to see how they treat that character.
Well, I'm not making a two-faced pun here, but he is what I call Batman's other side of the coin.
Right.
So, you know, not having him in Gotham, it wouldn't be complete to me because we really need to see his backstory if we're going to see Batman's backstory.
Yeah. Well, the thing is though, is that just like the producers have always said that this is not about Batman. Come on.
Yeah, I know, but we're seeing everybody.
Yeah. We're finding And I think especially with some of the scenes between Alfred and Bruce, we're seeing the making of the man,
mm-hmm.
you know, and how, especially since we see so much of how Bruce is reacting in the aftermath of Thomas and Martha's murder, right. you know, really what shapes him. So one of the things that Ryan and I had wondered was, you know, was he going to encounter some barrage of bats flying in his face or something like that?
You know, I expected that in this episode, yeah. I have to say.
Yeah.
But I'd like to see really, you know, the start of the Joker as well. So even if they don't come together, Bruce and whatever the Joker's name is in this, even if they don't come together, I kind of want to see part of what makes him, you know, interaction or no. So I think it's a really cool addition to the show.
Well, what's going to be interesting too, I think, is it appears that this, this encounter with, who the person that will be the Joker may indeed be kind of the first brush with the law that he has.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be kind of interesting to see. That's what I love about this show. You're really seeing the origin mm-hmm. of the whole thing. In the comic, although, you know, you've got like Batman Year One and that show the early, some of the early events, you know, the murder of Bruce's parents and things like that, they don't flesh in a lot of the backstory. And I think this, because that story doesn't really exist, the show has been very, very good to create a viable storyline.
Sure. Know? Even if it's Elseworlds, it's a viable storyline. So, I mean, I'm not saying it's officially Elseworlds. That's just how I mm-hmm. think of it.
Mm-hmm.
Is it an Elseworlds comic? I mean, a lot of people are critical of it because they don't think it's a real Batman adaptation. And so I just imagine it's Elseworlds. And, you know, that way it's fine.
That's a good way to look at it. Yeah. So we got some feedback this week from Jess in Atlanta, and we were going to play this clip. But I have to say that as you listen to her feedback, the fact that we now know that the Joker is going to be introduced into the storyline, perhaps her feedback can be viewed in a different light. So let's go ahead and listen to Jess.
Hey guys, this is Jess in Atlanta, and I'm just sending in some feedback after watching The Fearsome Dr. Crane. So I find this very interesting, all of the supervillains that they're developing almost a little bit more so than the heroes. I think that by the end of the season, hopefully one of the supervillains will emerge. I think they're most likely setting it up to be Penguin, although up until this episode, I really thought that Nygma was going to snap and become the Riddler at the end of the season. I also think it's really interesting what they're doing with Dr. Crane, although I think it's his son that should ultimately become the Scarecrow and not the guy that we're actually chasing in this episode. So I just wanted to send in those quick thoughts, and thanks for doing the podcast. Talk to you guys soon.
All right. Well, thanks, Jess. Yeah, I think you're correct. It is Jonathan who becomes the Scarecrow. But the observation about Penguin, they've been building that this whole season.
Mm-hmm.
The rise of the Penguin. And actually, during the discussion of this week's episode, I've got some thoughts on in terms of how much he'll rise based upon some of the comments that Maroney and Falcone shared together. Now that the Joker is going to be coming into the mix, I'd be interested in hearing from you again to see if that's kind of changed your mind. What do you think, Karen?
I would love to hear more comments from Jess to see what she thinks now. I don't know that Joker's going to develop as much as the Penguin.
Right.
This season, at least. And honestly, Ed Nygma, where is he going?
Well,
you know, I like him as a good guy right now.
I keep making the prediction every single week for the past, I think probably for the past 2 or 3 weeks now, I've been saying that he's really close to snapping, especially when he was being, he was being teased by that medical examiner.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And I'm like, he's going to snap real soon. And I,
well,
and I keep
waiting
for
it. Well, that was a real questionable behavior. I mean,
yeah.
That was...
Get your hand out of that corpse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's close, I get that, but I kind of dig him the way he is,
well,
you know?
Well, here's the thing, though, too. If you look at the artwork for the show, there is a building that has a the green question mark on top of it.
Yeah, I know.
So I'm thinking it's like, you know, it's kind of baked into the show already. We know he's the Riddler.
Sure.
You know, I'm really curious as to when we're going to see that kind of that switch go off, you know?
Yeah, I know it's not if, it's when. Yeah. I really do, but there's just something in me that, you know, I kind of want him to stay how he is. Mm-hmm. For a little while longer. I know. I love the Riddler. I really do. But
he's literally
my thing about him, that nerdiness.
It's my favorite character. But we want to hear from GSM listeners. Go ahead and give us some feedback by calling the voice feedback line at 304-837-2278.
And we also have a page at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And you can type us a text message. And I hate when I say that. I don't know why I say type. You can also send us an audio file by uploading
You can send it like an MP3 or something.
Yes, an MP3 or a wave or whatever. And you can also use our SpeakPipe widget and speak directly into your microphone.
Yeah, SpeakPipe's pretty cool. We've used that in the past on our pages, and it works incredibly well. So check it out. But we're going to jump into introducing a couple of new characters this week. We see three characters introduced for the first time. We see Kelly and Mace, who are both...
Pinky.
Yeah, we see Kelly and Mace, who are both people that are in this kind of underground prison where Fish Mooney's ended up.
Okay, Mace...
Yeah.
He's not in it long.
No. No.
Okay, so I kind of hand wave him. Whatever, he's the king. Fish, you know, gets rid of him quickly.
Can I make a pun here? He thought he'd be sleeping with the fish.
The fish.
But now he's sleeping with the fishes.
Oh my god.
That's pretty bad, isn't it?
That's the worst. But Kelly's hinky.
Something's up with him.
Yeah, I think so, too.
What do you think about the introduction of Judge Turnbull?
I think we've seen the last of Judge Turnbull also.
He was in a compromising position, needless to say.
Wow. That was kind of intense.
Yeah.
For NBC.
Yeah. Well, the show, I think in general, and Ryan and I have talked about this early in the season on whether or not it was appropriate to watch with, you know, 13-year-old kids, and
no.
in it's TV 14. Okay, and I thought, and my initial impressions were it's even a bit too much for 14. I think.
Yeah, yeah, that's like 16.
I mean, there was blood spatter in this, like blood spurting pretty good in this episode too.
Yeah,
so.
And that was BDSM.
It was clearly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
Mommy, what's that thing in his mouth?
You see, son, that's it's called a ball gag. Wow.
And why was there a man and a woman in that room with him? Go to bed now, Sonny.
Exactly. That's a discussion for another era.
Right. Let's wait a few years and then maybe you can watch it again.
Not for the tween crowd.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, these characters, Kelly's a bit, as you said, hanky. He's just, I don't know what to think about him yet. He doesn't have a lot of dialogue, but he does have some interaction with Fish, kind of gives her the ground rules for this underground prison. You know, and Fish doesn't play by any rules. We all know that. So, and Mace, as you mentioned, we'll talk about this kind of in the rundown, but, not around for very long.
No.
And Judge Turnbull, there is that.
Yeah, and Kelly, he gives her the lowdown on everything. And then at the end, that kind of sets him up to be her sidekick. So we'll talk about that later.
Right.
But hinky. So now, time for our investigation. So shall we just dig in?
Let's dig right in. Now... I think this episode was great. I'm going to say that up front. And visually, very impressive. The director did a great job. And from what I learned in the research that I did about him, he is also a cinematographer. So that would make sense that this episode really looked beautiful. A lot of the camera shots were just done very well. And one of the in the beginning of the episode, we come back to the discussion that some of these victims of Dr. Crane, all of these victims are missing their adrenal glands. And we're like, what is this guy doing with these adrenal glands? So we see him putting it into like a grind press and making like this soup of adrenaline and hormones. And it was like so gross and nasty.
Yeah. Like super gross.
Yeah. But he's still causing havoc. And we kind of learn what he's actually doing. It makes a little bit more sense last week's episode with the group that he, the phobia group that he attended. He apparently has a phobia of fire. It appears that way, or because he injects himself with this hormone and then he kind of gets a hallucination of his wife, who all the investigators basically thought that his wife died in a car accident, but further probing illustrates the fact that she actually died in a house fire. Crane was in the home, did not save her, and then kind of involved his son, told his son to go downstairs, and really weird storyline. But he's injecting himself with this hormone to try to overcome his fears, apparently.
Yeah, fear of failure, I think.
Well, he did say fear of failure, yeah, in the last episode.
And probably fear of fire as well. Yeah. Maybe a whole fear of that incident thing. And it was weird to see, her name was Karen.
Right.
And I hate it when people name characters Karen and then they put them like on fire or, you know, there's the whole Exorcist 3.
Is it a fear of yours?
Thing. A little bit. When I watched the Exorcist 3, they preyed on women named Karen. So every victim was named Karen. And it always bugs me.
It's like, is your name Sarah Connor?
Exactly. So to see her like four times on fire, I was like, come on. Can we not see her on fire again? Yeah, that was weird. And I loved the effects, though,
mm-hmm.
of like the woman. Not only was she on fire, but she was like vibrating.
Yeah, like pulsating. Yeah.
Yeah, really cool. And then you just knew he was gonna, when he started talking to his son, you just knew he was gonna start messing with him too. Ugh.
Yeah, so basically the thing that kind of bothered me though about Gerald Crane, who goes by the pseudonym Todd that we learned last week, Dr. Crane is injecting his son in with this hormone, and that's kind of creepy.
Yeah, it's bad. But his son is afraid of everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he's amping up the serum for his son.
Right.
And the thing that got me is the serum is working on him because he doesn't seem afraid when they're shooting at him.
Right.
But I guess the amped up serum, not so much.
But the son, as we kind of get to late in the episode, the son is he gets put into a state where he is permanently seeing visions of this creepy scarecrow.
Right.
So scarecrow. even though the hormone is no longer in his system, his brain apparently has been altered in a way where he continues to see these kind of evil manifestations. So that's kind of eerie.
Now, let me ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't that long ago, right? I mean, I know it's in the past, but why didn't they put him in a medically induced coma? Why are they being so cruel as to just leave him awake if he's seeing? They know he's seeing things and that he's scared all the time.
I have a theory.
Okay.
It's a television drama.
Okay, I get that. But still, they could have put him in a coma and had him have these vivid dreams.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And
see his eyes going or something.
Yeah, I don't know. I think they did a pretty creative way of spawning that character.
I agree.
Yeah, I think they did a good job with it.
Yeah, you can see where he would become the person we know he's going to become.
So that's pretty much the overarching storyline in this episode, is that Dr. Crane's really kind of still murdering people, still stealing their adrenal glands, injecting himself and injecting his son. And we'll talk a little bit later about what becomes of Dr. Crane, but we do know that Jonathan is in the hospital and permanently damaged as a result of Dr. Crane's, what does he call it? Not a hypothesis. Did he say hypothesis? He's trying to prove a hypothesis or something like that.
He wrote a thesis or something.
Yeah.
And Julian Sands, I have to say, you and I talked a little bit before we started recording. Last week did not do Julian Sands justice, and I think this made up for it.
I honestly thought last week's episode was one of the worst episodes of the season, but this one was incredible.
Because it's a setup, as we know now, for this week. And now putting it in perspective, it's still not great.
Right.
But as a setup for this week's episode, you know, looking back, you have to say, okay, I get it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely caused me to kind of view last week's episode in a much different light, for sure.
Right. Still not great, again, but it was lackluster. I was underwhelmed, as I said to you in a message. But Julian Sands still, he's riveting, I think.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
He's great. The actors they get for this show are amazing.
They emote very well. That's kind of the way, especially the actor that plays Maroni. He just has such a way of showing his emotion in a great way. I mean, I pick on Ben McKenzie a little bit too. I mean, I like the way he portrays Gotham, but his snarkiness is in some ways over the top.
Yeah.
But I love it. You know, it just works. But moving on to the police and the GCPD, we do see quite a bit more of the storyline with Gordon and Dr. Tompkins in this episode. And one of my favorite scenes is actually kind of in the front end of the episode where they're outside and Gordon remarks about the fact that they were on their fourth date together and he had still never seen her apartment.
Yeah,
and she kind of quips back to him and says, "Oh, what room are you interested in seeing?" And he plays along and says, "The kitchen," and she says, "No, kind of small." But she says, "The bedroom. I think you'd like that room." So he yells, "Taxi!
Ready to go?
Taxi!" And then she throws the cold shoulder and says, "Not tonight, tonight, honey. I've got a big day tomorrow because I'm the new medical examiner." And he says, "You're kidding." but that kind of sets up for the entire episode kind of a not a cat and mouse thing, but kind of a the storyline where he's like, "Look, you can't be kissing me at the police station. It just doesn't look good."
And he gets her back. For the wah-wah at the beginning.
So
I don't think that was his modus operandi, but you know, I get where he's coming from.
Right.
It is inappropriate.
Yeah, but she says, "Well, you know, we'll just have to be discreet," and she kisses him on the cheek, and Bullock's always there after she kisses him.
Okay, that was one of my favorite scenes, when he shows up and he's really like sarcastic about it. I'll leave you guys alone to have your little powwow.
Yeah, Bullock's awesome. Love Bullock.
I love him.
But basically, you know, the police in this episode, Bullock and Gordon are still kind of pursuing Dr. Crane, and they finally do catch up with him and they shoot him. They shoot him, and that's when they call the ambulance for Jonathan, because Jonathan is found in the field convulsing by the scarecrow that he kind of looks. I think that's kind of why that image is kind of reoccurring for him now, because as he looked up laying in this field, that's what he saw. He saw this scarecrow above him, and it really cool effects in this episode. The scarecrow's eyes kind of turned like a orangey red and glowed. It was really awesome.
Yeah. That was crazy scary, I thought.
So what's your take on the mob this week? Marone and Falcone, I mean, are they like, are they at peace with each other now? What do you think?
Well, they seem to have a little bit of a bromance happening.
Have a cigar.
Over our judge.
Well, Well, yeah. So talking about Judge Turnbull and setting that up here. So there's actually quite a bit that happens with the mob in this particular, and we haven't even mentioned Fish yet, really. But Marone and Falcone kind of have some talks, and there's an agreement that they're not going to harm Penguin at all.
That comes after the judge, but they're discussing it.
Yeah.
And definitely, Falcone has the judge already, so he's got an end game happening. And he's kind of playing with Marone, right? With Marone.
Yeah.
And he plays that long game so well with him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when he finally does take him in to show him the judge, you know, he's already got him.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically, he kind of dangles the judge in front of Marone and says, look, you know, I know you're not a fan of this guy, so you leave the Penguin alone. He's yours. You've got the judge, and he's got him locked up in the room, and there's some BDSM going on, a little casual.
50 Shades of
Justice. 50 Shades of Justice, I guess. One of the other great sequences in this episode was when Penguin is wandering around now pretty much his nightclub.
Yeah.
Talking to Falcone and saying, well, Maroney's going to kill me. You need to protect me. And Falcone's just ignoring him and saying, I think you need to change the lights. You know, we need to make this place look a little bit less fish-like, you know?
Yeah.
But Penguin persists and he says, but he's going to kill me. He just keeps ignoring him. I think that was great. It was great interplay there. Oswald kind of rebrands this Oswald's, and he hand delivers an invitation to Gordon at the police department. And Gordon's like, I'm not going to come. And, then Penguin's like, someday, Jim Gordon, you're going to need me someday.
Hello, Penguin. Well, they work together for the Flask thing.
Right.
And Gordon is still thinking about it, but he's like, oh, I don't want to work with you again. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, it's also setting up for Harvey to say, hey, we might need him again.
Mm-hmm.
And for him to maybe be that Bullock that kind of went to the dark side in the comic books.
Right.
So, you know, there's all kinds of levels to that storyline with him going to the precinct.
Right.
So I like that.
So lots going on with Marone and Falcone in this episode, and it seems like for right now, they're kind of at a little bit of a ceasefire, if you will, with each other.
I'm going to ship them as Falcone.
Okay.
Their bromance.
There you go. That works. So let's talk a little bit about Fish Mooney. Now, I didn't quite get the whole pirate thing last week.
Yeah.
With her. But she's in this kind of underground prison now, and she meets this Kelly guy, and there's a couple of really big dudes fighting in the hallway, and he tells her, he's like, oh, you know, whoever the newest is, the second guy has to beat him up or something like that. Something really weird. I didn't quite catch what they said.
What he said was,
mm-hmm.
when a new girl comes in,
okay,
the first guy that approaches the new girl gets killed.
Oh, is that what he... Okay.
By the second guy, and then the second guy has at it.
Hmm.
So that's what he's saying.
Okay.
And what I thought was Hinky.
Yeah.
And he's telling Fish this because he knows who Fish is.
You think so?
So that Fish will stand up and do something about it. I think he's spurring her on,
mm-hmm.
so that he sets up for him being like her sidekick down there.
Could be.
I really do think he's trying to get an in.
Yeah. So this is where this Mace character comes into play. Apparently the guy in charge of this, I don't know if it, you wouldn't really call it a cell block, 'cause it's like a big building. It looks like, but, this guy Mace is in charge, running the show down there, and she kind of weasels in, but she's great in this episode. She goes up to two guys and she basically says the first one, you know, and I forget the exact dialogue, but something to the
effect of, one of you is going to die quick yeah. and the other one is going to die slow.
And they walk away.
Yeah.
So she kind of weasels her way into this mace guy and kind of sweet talks him a little bit. But in a way that's forceful and showing that, you know, she's got some gump, and she's not, an easy one to, overcome. So she almost seduces him in a way and then manages to stab him in the jugular vein.
Yeah.
That was really bloody.
I think that she might have been thinking we could work together for a minute until he decided that she was going to be his girl.
Until he opened his mouth, period.
Right. And then, you know, she went for the knife.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it.
Yeah.
And then I'm in charge here. And that got interrupted by, they took my eyes.
Yeah. So this girl apparently that had been there before was brought back. Mm-hmm. And they had removed her eyes. That was kind of towards the end of the episode. But yeah, so Fish is, I think Fish is kind of the ringleader down there now. I can't wait to see where they take that, because I still don't really know the point of that whole storyline yet.
Well, they're organ harvesting.
Yeah, yeah.
So the pirates apparently are harvesting organs, and now she's going to have to figure out a way to be the savior, I'm guessing,
mm-hmm.
which is not her role.
Right.
As a general rule, she's not the savior. She's usually in charge. So she's going to have to probably take them out, mm-hmm. I'm guessing.
So in this episode, I think we really finally see some scenes with Bruce that are actually significant, mm-hmm. and show a little bit more about his emotion and some bonding with Alfred. I really like the scenes. Bruce goes on a hike, and it was really kind of a touching storyline because he went on this hike every year with his father, apparently,
mm-hmm.
or multiple times a year. I'm not sure, but he did this hike with his dad, and it was the first time he was doing it on his own. And Alfred's like, okay, you know, you're going to be all right. Off you go then. And on this hike, we see him encounter two piles of rocks. One pile has a rock on it that has BW for Bruce Wayne, and the other pile has TW for Thomas Wayne. And it appears that every time they go on this hike, they place a new rock on this pile. So there were lots of rocks there. I think they'd done this hike many, many times.
Hmm. It looked like maybe his dad had done it.
As a child, maybe?
Maybe, because there were lots more rocks on his pile.
And then they decided
to continue the tradition with his son,
right,
which meant it was a really big deal.
Right. And then they would wake up the next morning and kind of witness the sunrise together. So it was, right. It was a very significant moment with the father and his son. And mm-hmm. you saw some real emotion from Bruce's character in this, because he actually starts picking up the rocks and throwing them. And then he kicks the piles over. So he's obviously distressed, missing his father at that point in time. So
did you think to yourself, he's going to regret doing that? Because those are rocks that his father wrote on, and you know, there's something that he might want to have later on down the line.
Perhaps, but I can't really tell now. I mean, that's definitely a possibility, but in terms of whether or not they would address that in the storyline, I'm really not sure.
No, I don't think they will. Yeah. I think as
a human, you know, you tend to do things in times of emotional despair that you regret later.
Yeah.
You know, quite often in life, but, yeah, that's a good point. That's a great point.
I just thought, oh, it's going to be down at the bottom of the lake.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
Never going to get that one back.
Yeah.
Wah, wah, wah.
Yeah. Well, he does have enough money. He could get divers to go down and get them if he really wanted them. So,
fetch me some gray poupon at the bottom of the pond.
That's right.
But,
Hello, let me get up my monocle and search for it.
who are you, Mr. Peanut?
No, Mr. Monopoly.
There you go. Even more appropriate. But, So Bruce kind of wanders off in the next cut scene, and he falls down a very steep hill in the woods, and he injures his ankle, spraining it. We see a little bit of, I think, could be a tip of maybe Alfred's influence on him in terms of survivalism, because he'd obviously been sitting there for a while because it's now dark when he does this, but he takes his belt and a couple of sticks and he forms kind of a makeshift splint for his ankle.
Mm-hmm.
And then he starts crawling up this hill, and it's very, very dark at this point in time. And when he gets to the top of the hill, he sees Alfred sitting there by a campfire. That was awesome.
How rude.
Well, you didn't help me, man. What's going on there?
Although I get it.
Yeah.
I think Alfred did that for his own good. He knew his leg wasn't broken. I'm sure he looked down there and checked him out.
Right. And this kind of goes back to the comic for me and also the Christopher Nolan films.
Yeah.
In terms of the relationship that Michael Caine's character had with Christian Bale's character in the Christopher Nolan films, was kind of a very much a father-son relationship, a benefactor kind of relationship, I thought. And this was the first, I wouldn't say the first, because the thing with the fight, and he kind of taught him how to fight and address the bully. But this was a real touching moment in terms of Alfred and Bruce sharing some time together, because Alfred stayed overnight with him and they got to witness the sunrise together the next morning. I think that's got a lot more significance in terms of the overall relationship than is visible on the surface, but I think it's pretty poignant.
Yeah, and the reason I brought up the fact that his father may have come there before Bruce, he took Bruce, is that I think it's significant that Alfred took this up with him now that his father's dead, because it's like they're passing it on to him and Alfred. Mm-hmm. So maybe this is going to be a thing that they pick up together.
Mm-hmm.
So, it was his father, then his father and Bruce, and now it's going to be Bruce and Alfred. So it's not ideal, obviously, but, now it's, passing the torch onto someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was really, really touching that's how it happened. And I also think it's good that he let Bruce crawl up the hill by himself,
right,
knowing that he wasn't in super danger. I mean, if he collapsed or something, he would have gone down and gotten him. It was,
Alfred's very much a tough love kind of guy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he grew up hard.
He was in the Naval something. Yeah.
Yeah. He wants Bruce to be tough.
Yeah.
He doesn't want him to be a pansy.
Yep.
Growing up on his trust fund.
Yep. Exactly.
So, that's his deal. And I dig that. And I just wanted to put in here, I shattered my leg growing up. And my friends, this is how smart they were. They got a magazine and they put it around my leg and then they tied stuff around it. And then we waited for the ambulance.
Wow.
So I felt his pain big time when he did that. I'm like, awesome, that's so smart.
Yeah.
So yeah, although mine was broken. His was not.
No, initially I thought it was broken until he actually said he sprained his ankle. I thought it was worse.
It might have been.
Mm.
But, when he got up to the top, it definitely was. And you and I said before we started recording, we expected bats.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, me, definitely me too. But yeah. I think it's too soon for the bats as well, looking back on it.
But I thought it, watching this episode, I felt that was going to happen.
I know, me too. I kind of wanted it.
Yep.
And then I thought, it might be too soon for the Batman thing.
So. Right. And we didn't really, I didn't toss it in the note, but we did talk about this particular scene before we started recording. This scene with Ed Nygma and Oswald.
So good.
Was incredible. It was kind of like, it was when Penguin came to deliver the invitation to Gordon, and Ed kind of catches a glimpse of him through his peripheral vision, and then he kind of approaches him and
Penguins, yeah, they do this little dance.
Penguin's little reaction was like, hello, can I help you? By the way, do you know who I am? Because if you did, you're standing way too close.
Right.
And then Ed kind of tosses off a couple of riddles. And do you like riddles? And Penguin's like, no.
No. Yeah.
And then he offers a fact about penguins, which I don't think he mentioned that he was the penguin to Ed.
No, but I think he knows.
Okay. Because he says, by the way, emperor penguins keep eggs warm by placing them on the tops of their feet. And I was like, okay. He didn't appreciate that.
Bullock is calling him the penguin all the time. Yeah, he's around.
True. Yeah, that's Bullock. True.
So,
but definitely a great kind of back and forth between those two.
I loved that little riddle where he said, rich people don't have it, poor people do, and something about eating it, and the answer was nothing.
Yeah.
I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was a good little riddle.
Yeah.
And it's definitely a riddler riddle.
Yeah, it worked really well. We'd love to know what your thoughts and theories are about this particular episode, what you've seen, and what's to come. Hit us up on Twitter. Our handle is @GothamGSM. And become a fan of the Golden Spiral Media Network on Facebook. We've also got a Facebook fan page, and that can be found at facebook.com/groups/GothamGSM. If you'd like to join our group, just send us a little invite there to join, and we'll add you to the party.
Yep. I'm a member.
Absolutely. It's we're looking to get more engagement in the group, so hop on over there and let us know what you thought.
Yep.
Speaking of engagement, what do you think about this particular episode overall? I gave this 9 overfilled wine glasses out of 10.
That's a nice one.
Yeah, I really liked it.
I went grosser, so try not to cringe too much. I gave it 8.5 syringes out of 10. Shudder.
8.5 goopy filled. Nasty.
Clumpy.
That was really gross. I mean, the thing is, I'm a horror fan. So in terms of like I grew up on a lot of like the Friday the 13th and the splatter movies and things like that. This was like more of a realistic,
right?
You know, organ grinding. Ugh. It just cringe. It made me cringe.
Yeah. You know, horror movies, sometimes you take yourself out of it because it's so unrealistic.
Mm-hmm.
But this was like, you could see someone grinding up a person's organ and putting it into a syringe, mm-hmm. like for reals. And, you know, not that I have ever seen that, but, you know, so yeah, it was cringy gross.
Pretty nasty. But that's going to wrap it up for our investigation this week. We'd appreciate it if you could leave us a review at goldenspiralmedia.com/iTunes.
Will Oswald ever learn the proper way to hold his liquor? For the answer to this question and more, tune in next week.
Same Gotham time, same Gotham channel.